Welcome to Jefferson's Transplant Ed. This is a special limited series podcast dedicated to transplant and powered by Jefferson Health. I'm your host, Dr. Corey Cross. Joining us today is Dr. Jerry McCauley. Dr. McCauley is the director of the Division of Nephrology and is a transplant specialist at Jefferson Health. He is also the president of UNOS, the United Network of Organ Sharing, and the president of OPTN, Organ Procurement and Transplant Network. Today, he will be discussing with us how patients get placed on the transplant list and a new move that occurred this summer to make this list race neutral using a race neutral EGFR. Dr. McCauley, thank you for joining us today.
Hello.
Let's start with some kidney basics. What is the EGFR? What is a glomerular filtration rate? And is it the best indication of kidney function?
Well, so GFR is glomerular filtration rate. I think most of the physicians on the call will understand that. Estimated EGFR is estimated GFR, so it is based upon a calculation and not a direct measurement. Some of the physicians may remember the old inulin clearances, creatinine clearance. That's a direct measurement. EGFR is a formula-based estimate.
And is the GFR a good indication of kidney function?
Yes, the GFR is a good indication of renal function, depending on how you do it. So there are multiple direct tests that can measure GFR that are more or less accurate. And then there are estimates that are more or less accurate. And there are multiple formulas over many years that have estimated GFR.
So in talking about the EGFR and a race-neutral EGFR, I think we need to back up and just understand how EGFR was not race-neutral prior to this summer. So it's my understanding that the race coefficient was basically built into the math equation used to, as you say, calculate an estimated GFR. And this was done based on some studies that were done a while back that showed that people who they identified as Black in these studies had a higher baseline creatinine and therefore a higher baseline GFR. And that they baked this into these math equations and that this line of thinking really disadvantaged patients who were categorized as Black because they would need a higher GFR to qualify for a kidney or to be placed at a certain place on the list. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And so this original study was a study that was not designed to measure GFR. It was the MDRD equation study that many people may remember. It's modification of diet and renal disease study. It was an NIH study. The purpose of the study was to see if lowering protein intake in patients slowed the progression of renal disease. And for many reasons I won't get into right now, the study did not show that it had an effect, but we learned subsequently that reducing protein intake actually does slow progression. But what came out of that study, they went back and looked at the population that they had, and they did a regression equation and then generated this, what's now called the MDRD equation. And that's what most of your physicians will understand this equation to be. So that's really the equation we're talking about.
Okay.
So there was the old Gault-Prokof equation and others, the Schwartz equation for children. We're not talking about those. The Gault-Prokof, the oldest equation, did not include race.
Okay.
Only the MDRD included race.
Okay. And so the equation that I'm used to as a physician did not include race either.
Well,
as a pediatrician, I mean.
Yes. Schwartz does not include race. Yes.
Got it. Okay. So we understand why it is so important that you explain this to us. Could you explain how the EGFR affects placement on the kidney transplant list?
Well, it's really the entry point. So patients can be placed on the list and get points if your estimated GFR or your GFR, either measured or estimated, is 20 or below. So if it's above that, let's say it's 21, you don't get placed on the list and get points. So it can be that close. So it could be 22, 23, and you still don't get placed on the list and get points. Now, the MDRD equation gives a higher value for Black patients than it does for everybody else in the universe. And so you would see that if the cutoff point is 20 and you're giving higher points to Black patients, then Black patients might not get on the list because they may have a value of 22. And for the same sort of same creatinine value, a patient may have a value of 18 and they would get on the list. The black patient with a slightly higher value would not get on the list.
And then what other factors are included in determining whether or not you get on the list? Is it the EGFR, as you pointed, is the entry point. So if you don't make that 20, nothing else matters?
Right. And so we're talking about kidney right now.
Right.
And we're specifically talking about deceased donor kidneys.
Okay.
So if we're talking about a living donor transplant, then it's up to the transplant center what GFR they would accept for that patient. So it doesn't have to be 20 or below. But if you're competing for deceased donor kidneys, then right. It has to be at that value. And so there are many other variables like matching and age and time on dialysis is a big one, because we know the longer people are on dialysis, the more likely they are to die. So we'd like to get people off dialysis as quickly as we can so they get added points for the time on dialysis and others.
Now, can I ask you, how long do most individuals wait for kidneys? And is it common for people to die before they receive them?
Yes, so it's variable, and it depends on where you live. In some areas, there may be a relatively short waiting time, relatively in 2-3 years. Other places, it may be as long as 8 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So some of the policy, and I won't get into the details, but some of the more recent policy has tried to eliminate this geographic variation. And so we used to use something called donor service area, which was one of the most important variables in deciding how long a patient waits. And it was a totally arbitrary classification. It was based upon setting up OPOs and organ procurement organizations, those kind of things, and what area they were covering. It had nothing to do with the biology of transplantation. So this DSA has been eliminated now as a variable.
Got it. Although I'd assume that location still matters, right? Because the organs only last for a short period of time.
Well, it's how long you can keep the organ with cold ischemia time. But it also has to do with where the donors are and those kind of things. So geography still does matter. I think there are more recent data, I'm hoping we'll see it later. So this donor service area elimination has been about a year and a half or more. We're beginning to get some preliminary data, and some of it is suggesting that the geographic variable is reducing variability. So I'm hoping we see more of that.
Well, that's really hopeful.
Yeah.
That would be wonderful if we could get donors and people who need the organs to match up regardless of where they are geographically.
Yeah. So our goal is really to have this. So it shouldn't matter where you live. So patients should have the same opportunity to be transplanted anywhere in the country. And there shouldn't be multiples of waiting time in one geographic area versus another. And we're working towards eliminating that and hopefully making it geographically fair.
That sounds great. And then in this country, I think most physicians know this, that we have an opt-in program.
Right.
I don't know that many doctors actually discuss with their patients. I mean, like I said, I'm a pediatrician, but I don't know how many adult physicians or physicians for adult patients talk to their patients about organ donation. But how would wait time be different if we had more donors? Is the fact that we don't have enough donors causing this problem?
That is the fundamental issue. So we don't have enough donors that become available as donors. So if we were able to receive organs from all of the potential donors, then we could essentially eliminate the problem of not enough kidneys or livers or hearts. And by the way, most of what we've been talking about has been kidney, this GFR business and all that. It does not apply to liver, heart, and others unless they're getting a kidney.
That makes sense. And then if you could just talk to other doctors out there, if they do bring this up to their patients and they hear what I've heard before, which is a concern that checking the organ donation box, patients seem to fear that doctors will let them die if they think that they can harvest their organs, which to me is insane because as a doctor, that's something we would never do. What advice do you have for doctors to combat that line of thinking and to reassure patients that they should become organ donors if they can?
Sure. Well, this is one of the most common myths of organ donation. That, you know, once I check that box, they're going to stop taking care of me. The only thing they're going to want is my organs. And that clearly is not true. since I'm talking to a physician audience, this should be a lot easier than talking to lay people, because physicians understand how hard we work to save patients' lives.
Absolutely.
And so the doctor taking care of that patient would not want to facilitate the death of his patient.
Absolutely not.
And let me say that there is a separation between the care team, the doctors taking care of the patient, and the donor team once the patient has become declared a potential donor. So they do not cross over. So the care team is not involved in the donation process. And the donation team only gets involved when they're declared a donor.
And I think that for physicians, that's really important for us to stress to our patients, because just that basic understanding may help to increase the amount of donors we have out there.
Yeah. And let me be clear about being declared a donor. I'm talking specifically about someone who has had a brain injury in the hospital and has been declared, in quotes, brain dead. Once that has happened, the family has consented, then that's when the donor team gets involved. They don't get involved at any point until it has become very clear and legally clear that that patient is moving on as an immediate donor.
That makes sense. So pivoting back to the EGFR, the estimated glomerular filtration rate, while it's very common in medical research and in studies for people to be broken down into cohorts, and sometimes these cohorts are black and white or African-American Caucasian or male and female, smoker, non-smoker, the researchers do this to try to see patterns in data. But I want to make clear that these patterns that they may see have no bearing on actual individuals and how our genes are individually expressed. Can you speak to the EGFR and the race coefficient and how that puts patients at a disadvantage? Could you really explain that?
Sure. So the whole idea of race is a social construct. Basically, it's a fiction. We have decided that we will group people based upon certain characteristics at a social level. There is no genetic basis. There is no biological basis to group people as heavily by phenotype as we do. So you look a certain way and that puts you in a certain race. There are very, very few biological differences between people. And so the idea of race is really a sort of a non-starter. It's a historical, initially primarily American phenomenon that goes back to slavery and all of those kind of things, but it has no real basis in biology. And I think that's something that's very important for physicians to start to accept and to understand. There is a tremendous literature looking at race, the history of race, the inaccuracy of race, and predicting persons' illness and longevity. And remember, so that initial MDRD study we talked about, these were self-identified by race. So there was no measurement to say that people are one race or another, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we have all of these genetic tests, and people are finding out that people are very often a mixture of all sorts of people. And so where do you slice it? Say an African-American is 25% European.
Mm-hmm.
That make them black or white. And the
right.
reason I use 25% is that the vast majority, the average African-American in the United States has 25% European genetics. So,
no, I think you make a very good point. I mean, in reality, when you start doing genetics and 23andMe, you realize that we're all multiracial.
Yes. And so there isn't any race, right? I mean, our origins are different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what we African Americans, their ancestors, some of them come from Africa, some come from Europe.
Exactly.
And if you look at the Caribbean and other areas, people are a mixture of all sorts of people who've gone through the Caribbean and various other areas. So this idea of race, I think we understand it's a social construct. It does predict what is available in terms of resources and how people are treated by their phenotype. So if you look black, then there are certain things that are going to happen to you in society. And that may predict things like allostatic load, whether people are dealing with a lot of discrimination and more likely to have hypertension and heart disease. That is not race. That is how people are treated in the world.
Right. That has nothing to do with where your genes came from.
Yes. but it may have to do with how you're treated.
Right. So focusing on the EGFR and what has recently happened for people who weren't necessarily paying attention this summer, in June, the Organ Procurement and Transplant Network Board of Directors unanimously voted to remove race coefficient from the EGFR equations. Is that correct?
Yes. And so we at Jefferson, we did it a bit earlier. So there was a National Kidney Foundation, American Society of Nephrology task force that looked at this, and they spent some time looking at all the science related to it and finally came out with a consensus report. I believe it was in September of 2021 that suggested that we should eliminate race as a variable in estimating GFR. And so at Jefferson, we eliminated that equation. So at Jefferson, when we get our lab reports, there is one GFR. There isn't a black GFR and everybody else GFR.
Mm-hmm.
So we eliminated that about a year ago, a bit, you know, some 6 months or more before we did at UNOS and the OPTN.
And I just wanted to ask you, how has this affected your patients? How have you seen a change in the transplant list?
So as part of UNOS and the OPTN, we said, okay, this disadvantaged patients. So there are many patients who were not listed. And some of them are still in a position right now where they just haven't gotten that 2 or 3 cc per minute reduction in their GFR that gets them listed. If you apply the new formula, they would be appropriate for listing based on the old criteria of 20. So we are asking at UNOS, and there is a, we will be voting on a new policy that ask the transplant centers to examine their lists for patients who were disadvantaged in that way and make a correction, and those patients will get additional waiting time, appropriate waiting time, based upon if their GFR was appropriate a year or two ago. So that is in place right now. I would say for programs that are looking at their patients, you should go through your list of patients. If you have patients on your list, you don't need to wait for the OPTN to pass. This will almost certainly be passed. Start looking at your patients, generate your list of patients that you will be able to capture that additional waiting time. That will increase the likelihood that they're going to be transplanted pretty quickly.
So to reiterate, I think what you're saying is that even if you recalculate someone's EGFR now, using a race-neutral coefficient, right, and they meet that 20 criteria, where you are on the list is determined by how long you've been waiting to some extent, right, and having almost like put your time in. And So you want to make sure that if somebody was hanging around at a 20.5 or a 21 for X amount of time, that they get credit for that time when they enter the list and they're not entering as if they're a brand new candidate.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
And that waiting time can make a big difference in whether or not you get an organ as opposed to someone else.
I would imagine it does. Do you feel that there's anything else that should be considered when you're ranking individuals on the transplant list that isn't considered today?
No, I don't think so. I think we have algorithms now that are pretty predictive. And again, so the allocation system has been reworked multiple times. The most recent big change in the allocation system was December 2014. But then we've made some other changes in terms of geography we talked about before and some other changes. But in terms of adding things that are important for listing, I think we're okay for now. So policy and transplantation is a moving target. And as we learn new things, as we model the population, it may change. But right now, I think we're at a good place. We're moving much closer to equity in terms of our policy. That's not to say that patients are not being referred. So African-American patients are not referred for transplant as quickly as they should. And since we're talking up to physicians, if you have a patient in your practice, and they have chronic kidney disease and progressive decline in their kidney function, they should be referred to a nephrologist. The nephrologist should start working on evaluating those patients well before they need dialysis. And we would love to see patients transplanted before they need dialysis. We call that preemptive transplantation. that's best for the patients and best for long-term survival for patients.
And with kidneys, I know we've been talking about non-living donors, but in kidneys, we do have the benefit of, if you can identify patients who could benefit from a kidney, to being able to take a living donor kidney.
Yes, yes. And I don't want to say it's the best, but it, in terms of longevity, the kidney's lasting the longest. In terms of scheduling, the patient can schedule it on next Tuesday, for example. In many, many ways, it's the optimal way to do a transplant is to do a living donor.
But you need those doctors to identify, and you need those doctors to basically refer those patients and make that diagnosis and understand that that's available.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think any nephrologist should be talking with their patients about that well before they're talking about putting a fistula in the arm. You know, do you have family members who are interested in donating to you? Do you have friends who might be interested? So again, people don't have to be related. I think most docs know that. You don't have to be related to donate. So you can start that discussion very, very early.
No, that's wonderful advice. In summary, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, I think the only thing I would say is that we are moving towards a more equitable transplant system in the United States. So there is UNOS and the OPTN, that's the policy group and the group that manages the actual listing and those kind of things. But we need the help of other entities like dialysis units. If you have patients on dialysis, those patients should be referred for transplantation. If you're a primary care physician and the patient has chronic kidney disease and they have progressive chronic kidney disease, you should be thinking about getting that patient transplanted, either a living donor or putting them on the list at an appropriate time, referring them to a nephrologist. We know patients do better long-term if they're referred to a nephrologist earlier rather than later, and you get an opportunity to do transplants and those kind of things.
That makes perfect sense, and you can only make the policy. You're depending on everyone else to implement it.
Yes, yes.
Dr. McCauley, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your thoughts and expertise with us. You definitely illuminated a lot of this for us, and I think we have a much better understanding of what's going on in the kidney transplant world.
My pleasure.
For more information on transplants, visit jeffersonhealth.org/transplant. To refer a patient, please call 215-955-8900, or patients can call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. That's 1-800-JEFF-NOW. That concludes this episode of Jefferson's Transplant Ed Podcast. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and be sure to check out the entire podcast library for other topics that might interest you.